back catalog of all of my videos on BitChute. That is the platform for free speech, and my entire back catalog of videos are all there, all completely uncensored, and you cannot find them anywhere else at the moment. So please make sure you have me subbed there. It is also where I release my new videos. Last week, I did a review of the trailer for the latest anti-white Hollywood film, Come Away. Please, if you haven't watched it, go and watch it. And I will have a video out there this week on Friday about Britain's new diversity coin. So please make sure you have me subbed over on BitChute. Now, if you would like to contribute to the show, all financial contributions are greatly received, and the best way to contribute to the show is via Entropy. Now, the Entropy chat link is on my Twitter. It is also on my Telegram, and I am just putting it in the DLive live chat now. So if you would like to send a paid contribution, that is the best way to do it. Now, we read out all paid contributions live on the show. So any paid contribution that comes with a message will be read out live tonight, and the question will be put to the relevant member of the panel, or just read out if it's a statement. Now, if you have a question to ask and don't want to pay for it, you can also ask questions through Entropy that are non-paid, and any question asked through Entropy will be voted up or down by the audience who have the Entropy link open. So if you like a question, you can vote it up. If you dislike it, you can vote it down. And we always ask the top unpaid questions every week. So please use Entropy for that. If you want to simply make a financial contribution, one of the best ways to do so is via Bitcoin. And you can get my Bitcoin address by writing to me or by going to my BitChute account where it is posted. Now, if you want to write to me, you can do so by writing to mark@thefallofwesternman.com. I can give you bank details for an account that hasn't been closed. I can give you my Bitcoin address. Or if you've just got something to ask me or something to say or questions about Patriotic Alternative, my work, or if I can help you with anything. I do spend a lot of my time helping people with a variety of problems and also helping young men who need CVs doing for them so they can find work. But if you have any questions or need any help, or if you'd like to make a donation through other means, the best way to contact me is mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Now, we are going to start the show with a couple of bits of news. And the first bit of news is sadly not good news. The first bit of news is that a great friend of this show, somebody I've worked with on several occasions, I've been on his channel, he's been on this show a couple of times, Adam Green. Yesterday, he was deplatformed from YouTube. Without warning, they told him that basically his entire account was being removed. It was all pulled down. He had over 16 million views on that channel, and it has now all disappeared down the memory hole. So please go and sub to him on BitChute. His entire archive of old videos is there, and new videos will be put out on that platform. Now, I have spoken to Adam. I spoke to him a few days ago, actually, before he was deplatformed. He already saw it coming. He said that he'd had a strike beforehand on an old video that wasn't really relevant. He felt that people were going through his videos, flagging things, and he was very sort of aware that this was on the horizon, especially with the presidential election coming up and YouTube being more and more in the grasp of people who are viciously anti-white. So his channel has disappeared, but please do go and support him. I retweeted him. If you can retweet him, that would be really good. Spread awareness, and hopefully this will migrate even more people over to BitChute or to other alternative platforms. Now, I had been speaking to Adam about having him on the show before the presidential election. That is something I still intend to do. And next week, all things being good, Adam will be appearing here. Hopefully, then he'll be able to talk about all of this and plug his new channels. I believe he's also got a No More News 2, which is on YouTube, although that may well be removed in the coming days. Now, obviously, we are coming up to the presidential election. I believe it's going to be held, or it is held on the 3rd of November. Is that correct, Jason? Yeah, on the 3rd of November. Now, I am just going to pull up my calendar and look at November. Well, the 3rd of November is a Tuesday. Now, we don't usually stream on a Tuesday, but I think we will either stream on Sunday the 1st or Tuesday the 3rd. And I'm going to do a panel show. The panel will likely be composed of, well, it'll be me, myself, Laura. I've already spoken to Horace about this. He said he would like to come on. And potentially one other. I'm going to look around for somebody else. I might ask Dr. Patrick Slattery or somebody else from Britain. And we will do a little bit of presidential election special. Obviously, it's a huge political occurrence. It only happens once every 4 years. We do the same here in the UK if it's a general election. And then we will obviously discuss the results as they come in. And when the results are made final, we will do a bit of a roundup on that with the same panel, whether that be a few days later or whether the election is contested, which people are talking about, then it might be a week or so later. But either way, there will be a presidential election special, and I am putting that together. So I think that will be a good chat. And as I said, that will be here again on this channel. And I might also put that on YouTube, as it could well be might be a safe video. Anyway, I will now throw it over to Jason. Hello, my friend. What have you been up to this week, and who is on tap?
Well, Promethean hails to you, my dear brother. We've been very busy as always, and we're going to have tap actually today, later today, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So a bit late for you all over there in the UK, but we're going to have on tap with us Philosophicat. She's going to be back. She's been gone for a little while from the channel, but we'll have her back and see what's going on with her. I have to tell you, today is a wonderful day in the once great state of Virginia. As I guess, things are crazy. We'll talk about it over the course of the show, but the temperature is actually up to 80, almost 80 Fahrenheit, which I think is about 27 Celsius for you all. But before I throw it back, I want to give a quick spotlight to Eminent Rain. He's one of our great content producers, a musician, par excellence, and I will share his contact information over the course of the stream, and I pass it back so we can get to this magnificent show. Great to be with these two gentlemen, first time on PWR.
Thank you, and I'd just like to say, somebody's posted in the chat, the Radio Albion stream is working well. I have noticed over the last couple of weeks, we have had a slight decrease in traffic on DLive, but a corresponding increase in traffic over on RadioAlbion.com. Last week, we had our highest Radio Albion viewership to date, with 800 concurrent users listening or watching the show over there. So we are growing quite a bit over there. That's up from the original sort of 400 we used to get there. And I think a few people are migrating there because some people are having a few problems with the streaming quality on DLive. And just a quick suggestion, if you are having problems with the quality on DLive, I do suggest using a desktop computer and using an Ethernet cable rather than using Wi-Fi. I use Chrome as my browser. I've heard a few people have problems with Microsoft Edge. I don't know if that's common for everyone, but I use Chrome, a wired connection, and I use a desktop computer, and I've never had a problem with it at all. But obviously, other people are having problems. It might be down to other things, might be down to old hardware. I don't know. But if you are having problems with the DLive stream, please make sure you migrate over to RadioAlbion.com. Now, without further ado, we have not one, but two special guests here tonight. We have Calamity and No Chance. Now, this show does showcase some of the biggest names in nationalism from around the world. But we also showcase new and rising talent. And both of these guys have been regulars on numerous other PA supporting shows. They are both fantastic spokesmen. And I really, really love No Chance's channel. I like his comedy videos. They are absolutely too superb. These guys are rising stars in the movement. And it is a great pleasure to have them both here tonight. They are also both from Scotland. And I think that's something that's very interesting, because things are very different in Scotland to what they are in England and Wales. And I hope we're going to touch on that a little bit tonight. And it might be quite educational for our many viewers from overseas. So without further ado, if you guys want to introduce yourselves, talk about your own channels, give yourselves a bit of a plug, and tell the viewers here tonight how they can support your excellent work.
I'll let Calamity go first, since I'm a gentleman.
Too kind of you, sir. Thank you very much. Well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be on here, Mark and Jason. So a bit about me. Well, I am sort of, a former communist that had no idea what it actually meant. And over the last sort of 6 years, I've sort of come further and further right to the point I'm at now. And yeah, you can find me on my channel on YouTube. It's Calamity. And you can find me on Twitter at 5Calamity. And yeah, I'm just basically an edgelord that decided he wanted to start making some YouTube videos. So yeah, feel free to check it out, folks.
Aye, well, I'll jump in then. So I'm No Chance. You can find me on YouTube. I had a channel before March, but I just started political commentary and satire about March time, and I went from like 100 subs to 3,500 now, which was quite a surprise to me in that short period of time. The content seems to be received pretty well, so you can find me on there. And I'm not on Twitter, unfortunately. I gave up after my fifth account, so you can find me in Telegram, and that's just t.me/nochanceyt. And my content's just a mix between political commentary and, like, as Mark said, like, more, you know, humorous videos and satire, things like that. But aye, cheers for having me, lads, and pleasure to be on.
Well, it's great to have you both on. And the first thing we have to talk about, really, is how different life is in Scotland to life in England and Wales, especially life in England. Now, I haven't been to Scotland a huge number of times, but I have once driven all the way up to Aberdeen and back in a day. And one thing that shocked me about Scotland is just how sparsely populated it is and how white it is. Once I got north of sort of Glasgow and Edinburgh, I didn't see a single person who wasn't white. And really, I didn't see that many people. The roads are completely empty. There doesn't seem to be sort of the stress and the congestion and the people just packed in like there is in England. It's certainly not as densely populated. But one thing that always strikes me with Scotland is it is so white. It's such a beautiful country in terms of its natural beauty. And it does have such a distinct culture. And there are so many things that are quintessentially Scottish. And they are obviously the product of a distinct and individual group of people. However, Scotland always does seem to lean far more left than England. And when you look at Scotland, it was once a haven for the Labour Party, an absolute, a place where the Tories could never have won. And it always returned Labour to power year on year. But now it's fallen into the hands of the SNP. And I know people overseas, especially Americans, have this kind of weird idea that because it's got the word national in the name, the Scottish National Party, it'll be something like the British National Party. But it is not, obviously. It is a very left-wing party, very, very, how can I say, progressive. And Nicola Sturgeon and the people who run the party are dialing up the diversity right up to 11 and pushing all kinds of progressive nonsense. In fact, recently, Nicola Sturgeon went on record saying that anybody who comes to live in Scotland can be considered Scottish. So somebody could get off a plane tomorrow from Nigeria and they couldn't speak a word of English. They couldn't speak any of the other languages spoken in Scotland. They would just be there. But because they're in Scotland and want to make Scotland their home, she would consider that Nigerian Scottish. Now, this to me is obviously an absolute nonsense. And it's also very strange that in a place that is so white and has such a distinct culture and is so beautiful and has fought in many senses very hard for its independence, it would now be in the grip of people who actually want to erase the Scottish people themselves. Do you guys want to explain your position on this and how things work in Scotland?
Well, I know Alex Salmond, when he was leader, he made similar comments when he was up north. I think he was in, might have been the Isle of Skye. I can't remember. It was an island anyway up the north of Scotland. And he said the exact same thing during the independence referendum. But it's basically, if you exist on the land, that makes you Scottish. As long, if you identify as Scottish, you're Scottish. And it's just like that gender identity nonsense all over again. You just self-identify, therefore you are which is just, that obviously wasn't widely publicised, those comments that Alex Salmond made, because they were really looking to zone right into the tribal nature of Scots and claim they are a nationalist party, while at the same time kind of selling them globalism through the back door. But Nicola Sturgeon is just, I think she's worse. Actually, at the time, naively, I thought she might be all right. She might be a bit better than Salmond, but no, it's just, she's actually ramped it up even further, I would say, this whole diversity agenda. And as you said, the further north you get, the more white it is. But the central belt, I've noticed myself that it's becoming more noticeable how diverse it's getting. And I'm assuming this is due to our refugee stance. And I don't know if you're aware, Mark, but refugees can vote in Scotland. So can criminals. If it's not a like serial killer or something, if they've got a short enough sentence, they can get the vote. But
I didn't know that. I believe it's the same in Wales, though. I believe in Wales that's the case. And I also think in both Wales and Scotland, I know it's the case in Wales, but again, correct me if I'm wrong about Scotland, the voting age has been lowered to 16 in Scotland.
I don't think that's happened yet, but I think it's on the agenda, is it? I could be wrong there, but I know that they were heavily pushing for that, especially with them promoting independence too, which is hilarious. But they're the Democracy Party. They want to overthrow Brexit, but have a second referendum. They just, the second referendum party is what you can call them.
Yeah, I'm going to basically echo no chance in this one. I mean, I used to be a card-carrying SNP member until 2014. I quickly ditched that after the referendum when I started to really wake up to what was actually going on and what the SNP were trying to sell us with that ridiculous white paper at the time. But I just want to touch on something that No Chance mentioned as well about refugees being allowed to vote. The SNP are also the party that allows non-British refugees to stand for selection as MPs in their party. Look up a guy called Abdul Bustani, I believe, a Pakistani refugee who has basically joined the SNP and is now standing for a selection as a candidate. And yeah, apparently he has every right to do that as an Indigenous Scot does. So yeah, that basically sums up my feelings on the SNP. I despise them.
He's just as Scottish as you or I, Calamity. That's how it works. But I don't know if you're aware of this. In fact, I think I sent you the article. It was Resisting the Lies sent me. He's another YouTuber. He's pretty good for highlighting the SNP's idiocy constantly. Nothing gets by him. That's all his YouTube channel is. It's just full of exposing the SNP, which is brilliant. But they're looking to push this thing forward where they want 50% of BAME people. They're reserving places for political degrees to try and get them into politics. So 50%, they're nowhere near 50% of the Scottish population, but we're reserving half of university places for them to push them into Parliament, which I'm sure that will end well for us real Scots, not the fake Scots with the sticker.
Well, I've just actually looked this up, and the voting age is 16 in Scotland. However, that only applies to votes to Scottish bodies, so local councils or the Scottish Parliament. It doesn't apply for votes to the UK Parliament. But yes, it has been dropped to 16. Now, this is another question I've got to ask, because this is something I think that, again, Americans probably wouldn't be aware of. And if Jason wants to jump in after you guys have answered this, maybe he could ask you some questions if he needs any of the gaps filling in. But although Nicola Sturgeon and her predecessor Alex Salmond believe that anyone can just wash up on Scotland's shores from any place in the world, you could have had an Australian Aboriginal wash up on Scottish shores, and if he decided to erect a hut on the beach, according to Nicola Sturgeon, he would be Scottish. But could I be Scottish? Because I feel that a lot of the SNP's sort of rhetoric is anti-English. They're pro everybody else, but they're anti-English. Now, I know there has been animosity in the past between England and Scotland. I know that Scotland fought for their independence against England and English armies. But I still believe that the Scots and the English have far, far more in common than, say, the Scots and Aboriginals, or the Scots and Nigerians, or the Scots and Pakistani Muslims. And I find it absolutely absurd that Sturgeon and the SNP are desperate to break away from any union with England, but equally they are desperate to engage in a union with Europe or other countries. They're desperate for globalism, just globalism minus England. And although they claim to be this sort of lovey-dovey open party that wants to accept anyone, my big question is, could I, as an Englishman, be Scottish? What do you guys think?
Mate, you can't even have a bank account. You can't. So you're not. You can't be Scottish if you can't, you know, spend your money in Scotland. In fact, no. The pros of you having your bank account shut, you can spend all the nice diversity coins that they've just produced. So that's a plus. But no, and I know what you're saying, that there is an anti-English sentiment going on, and SNP, a lot of people call it Braveheart nationalism, where they watch the Braveheart movie, beat their chest and go, fuck the English. Sorry, am I allowed to swear on here? No, oh well. Bleep the English.
To be fair, when I read you the rules before the show, I didn't mention swearing. So you have broken a rule, but I didn't give it to you. I didn't give you the rule in advance, so my apologies.
Right, okay, I'll self-censor. I'll bleep myself. No, but it's true. And that's what I meant by that they try and zone right into the tribal nature of the Scots while denying them their identity. So they're playing two games at the one time, which don't work together. But the majority of people are too disconnected from politics to even see what's going on in front of them, which is the depressing thing. But that's why it's important that more people are kind of highlighting what's actually going on, and that this nationalist party is far from it. The thing that I can never get my head around, I did support Scottish independence for more of a smaller government point of view. That's why I supported Brexit as well. But if it was a choice between staying with the UK, having Brexit, or independence and joining the EU, I would vote obviously to stay with the UK, because again, it's smaller government, more accountability, and as you've noticed, as they devolve more powers to Scotland, the less they can blame on the evil Westminster that they like to scapegoat all the time. But I'll let Kel jump in.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with your sentiments there, no chance. And yeah, I will say to Mark that, yeah, you're English, you are the exception to the rule. You cannot be Scottish as far as these people are concerned. I mean, growing up in Scotland, I've got an English dad, he's a Cockney, and so I'm half an Anglo, and just the stick I got for that as well as a kid growing up, it's like, oh, you've got an English dad, you're not really Scottish. And I'm just like, yeah, but my mum's Scottish, I was born here, I live here, I identify as a Scot first and foremost. But yeah, so you know, yeah,
I always joke that you'll need to pitch a tent on the border, because you're half and half, you just need to stay there.
I'm curious if I could just jump in really quick. Mark was talking about how white Scotland is, at least the parts that he was in. And in the United States, we are of the perception that it is far whiter than other parts of the West. And typically we see, when that is the case, we see white people who are really benighted when it comes to what's taking place around the world, and when it comes to non-white races of the world and how very different they are. I'm sure they're all superior to us, but nonetheless, how very different they are, a very different biosphere. So I'm curious, with all of these really what is clearly incongruous ideas that are coming from these Scottish Nationalist Party or whatever it might be, that you have these superficial And now, no doubt that we've had wonderful and heroic people die on both sides of every conflict when we fought each other, and there were innocents harmed on both sides of every time we fought each other, and we're never going to be doing that again. That's a stance that we are taking, and we're going to do everything we can to prevent it. And nonetheless, these are superficial relative to the biosphere of peoples that create, whether you have a Nigeria or a Scotland or a Canada or United States or whatever it might be. So you have these superficial conflicts that would prevent somebody like Mark being considered or somebody who is half English, half Scottish, and then being ridden because of the half English part. And then you have this welcoming to somebody who is a completely different biosphere. They could show up one day and just, I'll be clear here really quickly for everybody who's listening now or in replay, that Scotland is inside of every single Westman on planet Earth. It can't be recreated by any other race of people. It can't be sustained by any other group of people. No other place on planet. There's no soil that is Scotland. Scotland is wherever the white man decides to build Scotland. So the magic is inside of us. It's not in magic soil. So that's really important thing to understand as well. But my question is, when you have these, you have these superficial conflict, really relative to something like the biosphere, and that for some reason is enough to say that somebody like Mark can't be a Scotsman. But you then have the biospiritual difference, and as long as that person doesn't fall in line with these superficial conflicts, so say from Nigeria or Nicaragua, wherever it might be, then they end up being okay according to this anti-whiteism. My question is, the working class folks in Scotland, the ones who are more in touch with reality, what are their sentiments when it comes to what's being pushed by these nationalist parties, this global anti-whiteism? Because I get that the working class folks are still going to be of the mind that, well, the superficial conflicts, they're still very relevant and meaningful. But how do they then incorporate, or are they incorporating, or do they see it as bunk? What's the sentiment, just widespread sentiment across the working class in Scotland when it comes to, well, these superficial conflicts, that they have great meaning, but a completely different race of people, that's legitimate to have. And also, let me just say, so that's the question. Let me just also say, there can be wonderful non-white people, paper Scottish people, paper United States people, paper Canadians, that could do wonderful things in our country. They could serve in the military. They could sacrifice. They could have medals of honor. So that's not taking anything away from them. We're just talking about a biological reality here when it comes to the creation and maintenance of culture and civilizations of each group of people. So just to round up, working class people in Scotland, how do they receive this sort of globalist, anti-white nonsense relative to the sentiment of inertia that is behind them pushing, saying, well, the superficial difference is that would keep somebody like Mark from being a Scotsman?
In my experience, anyone I've spoke to that are, say, diehard SNP, but working class, the majority of them are very anti-immigration. So they're just not, and they don't understand what's going on, really. They're just buying into the smoke and mirrors that the SNP are doing in the telly, pretending it's about the Scots, while I was going to say in private, they do say it publicly, but the majority of people don't tune into every move and every speech a politician's making. So as far as they're aware, they're supporting Scotland for the Scots, but the party in charge that they think is the nationalist party are letting people in floods and filling our hotels in the city centre on our tax money. I think that's why it is important to make sure that you are presenting these truths and these arguments to friends and family members who are pretty apolitical, but they've got this weird allegiance to a party that they don't understand. So the activism is important, but they are very opposed to immigration in my experience.
Yeah, I'll agree with no chance in that one again. I would like to add to that as well that a big part of the problem in Scotland at the moment is that so many Indigenous Scots are just completely disenfranchised from the political system. I believe the turnout at the last Scottish general elections where they elect for their own parliament was just a little over 50% of the electorate had turned out for that one. And the majority of that was SNP support, and that basically got them into, I think they're still in a sort of majority government for now. Or is it a minority government? It's one of the two. Anyway, yeah, that is a big part of the problem with Scotland, is just so many people are politically disengaged and switched off. And it let the SNP in. They're LARPing as nationalists when they're actually communist. And obviously all the anti-white stuff comes with that. So, yeah, and I agree with No Chance. Like, the best thing that people like us can do is, you know, just keep getting the word out. I mean, I don't live in Scotland anymore. I'm a refugee in England, so it were. And I'm kind of looking out from the outside in. And, yeah, so what I aim to do, like, on I do a weekly video. It's a series. My audience gets to pick who I put in a metaphorical gulag, so to speak. But before I do that, I always do a little segment called Cranky's Corner, where I basically just, I run down the week that was the SNP party and all the shenanigans that get up to. And it's just really just trying to shine a light on it and get more people aware of just how bad these people really are.
Because the sad thing is, though, it's not just the SNP. I remember watching, after the death of Fentanyl Floyd, the SNP decided, well, the Scottish Parliament decided they'll get together and talk about Black Lives Matter. And we had the Labour Party talking about their whiteness. And then we had our Conservative vote. The ex-leader, Ruth Davidson, stood up and she didn't even just talk about her whiteness. She went a step further where she pointed to her arm and went, I mean, I've got proper Celtic skin. As if, like, somehow being there, she's extra white, which makes it extra bad. It's just bonkers. Like, the Green Party are on board, the Labour Party, the SNP. It's, you're like, what can you do, like, apart from wake people up to the truths that's going on?
To be fair, though, Scotland is the home of the ginger, and gingers are the whitest of the white, aren't they? So I do understand what she meant.
Shout out to Chris from Patreon.
Yeah, if you guys are left out in the sun, if you come south of the border for too long on a sunny day, you literally melt or turn into lobsters. But I was just going to say something about the situation in Scotland. And this is one of the reasons why when we started Patriotic Alternative, we branded it the way we did. It isn't called, you know, the British this party, or, you know, the Party for British Freedom, or it doesn't have British in the name. And I think in the UK now, we are facing a very, very different political situation, a much more different situation than we've ever faced before. And when you, and I saw this emerging when I was in the British National Party, the beginnings of this were happening around the turn of the millennium, actually. You would knock on doors, even here in England, and you'd say, hi, I'm just calling on behalf of the British National Party. I was wondering if we could rely on your vote at the forthcoming election. And people would say to me, well, I do support what you're saying, but I'm English, I'm not British. And that was a message we were increasingly getting on the door down here in England. More and more people were identifying with the idea of being English and not British. And there's actually a few people in PA who are English that specifically didn't join the British National Party because it was called the British National Party. And they heavily identified as English nationalists and not British nationalists. And I think you're finding the same situation here in England to a degree that you have found in Scotland. And you also find it in Wales, that there is a huge resurgence of people who identify with the different constituent nations that make up Britain. So you see more people who say, I'm Scottish, mate. I'm not British. I'm Welsh. I'm not British. I'm English. I'm proud to be English. And I think that's a really important sea change in politics. And these parties that have stylized themselves on what British nationalism was back in the 70s or 80s are probably going to find it quite tough going at the ballot box, because when they do go and speak to people, on estates, whether it be north of the border or south of the border, I think they're increasingly going to be facing people who identify with being English, Scottish or Welsh. And for us, I believe that's a good thing, because Britain is an ever-changing union of nations. And if you look at the way the union has changed over the last few hundred years, obviously countries have been a part of the union, and some of these countries are no longer a part of the union. For example, Ireland was once part of the United Kingdom. It was once part of Britain. It isn't anymore. And obviously that can change. But I think people identifying with being Scottish, with being Welsh and being English is very important, because they aren't just historic nations, but they are actually ethnicities. The English, the Irish, the Scots and the Welsh are all distinct and individual ethnic groups that have a claim to these islands. Anyone can come here and actually apply for a British passport. It doesn't matter where you come from in the world, what language you speak, what ethnicity you are, you can still apply for a British passport and be a British citizen. But no one can actually come here and be Scottish, English, or Welsh unless they have Scottish, English, or Welsh ancestry. So this shift that in part is being pushed by the SNP, I think it does open the door to ethno-nationalism and to an increasing number of people talking about ethnicity and actually identifying with more than just this woolly term, British, that in the past has been used in quite a clumsy way historically by British nationalist parties. What do you guys think to that?
No, I completely agree. I think it's inevitable that that's happening. If you're denying all the natives their identity while celebrating everyone else's, you're handing off the natives' identity to outsiders while telling us, oh, what is truly Scottish, what is truly British. People are inevitably going to get protective of that, because they're not going to lay it down without a fight. And I don't mean call to arms, none of that. I just mean like a rhetorical fight, you know what I mean? A metaphorical fight. But I think you've noticed as well, even ignoring the Scottish, English, Welsh, you've noticed that the most diverse place in England, London, is they don't identify as English. They identify as Londoners because they see themselves as distinctly different from the rest of the country, which it is now, unfortunately. But you are going to see a revival of people identifying with their home country and, as you say, an increase in ethno-nationalism. I want to make that like not a bad word. I think there's a lot of negative connotations with that that gets linked to all sorts of things. But I just see it as you recognise the importance of maintaining and preserving your culture, your identity. And if you do want to protect the country that you grew up in, that you love, that your family's going to grow up in, the next generations, you must hang on to that. You can't just give it away because tolerance that you're getting sold. But no, I think it is an inevitability that ethno-nationalism is going to be at the fore of British politics in the near future.
Do you have any perspective on that, Calamity?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I have noticed, especially in the last few months or so, that especially on Twitter as well, there has been a more, the word indigenous is being used more and more, which I completely support. And I've made it my sort of mission the last few days. Got a shout out, give a wee shout out to Friendly Sperg here if he's watching, because he keeps finding these tweets on Twitter where it's just, you know, someone who's not an avowed nationalist or an open nationalist like say we are, but is like, you know, bemoaning the fact that their indigenous culture and the indigenous people of these islands are under constant attack now from all angles. And he just highlights these, and I sort of go into the comments and just start going scorched earth and all the liberals that are like, oh, but by indigenous, don't you mean the Jutes and that? And it's just, No, we mean the English, the Welsh, the Scots, the Irish. It's that simple. And I'm just seeing more and more of this online now, and more and more people making content about it. Like, say, Daughter of Albion a few weeks ago made one about ethnocide. And that is basically what is happening to us. And it's just, it's encouraging to see more and more people becoming aware of it and, you know, choosing to embrace their identity rather than, you know, sort of cast it off out of some misplaced sense of guilt or whatever, you know, or just because they've been gaslit completely by the establishment. So yeah, that's my thoughts on that one.
Well, I will say this as well. The establishment are pushing very hard upon us the idea of race. Now, this is a big about turn from the establishment, because for years it seemed their argument was that we are all the same. The argument was that everyone was the same, that race was irrelevant, that colour was skin deep, that we're all more or less identical. And anyone that thinks of race or anyone that thinks of ethnicity is somebody who shouldn't really be engaged with. But the left have increasingly pushed this issue of race, as well as parties like the Scottish National Party and Plaid Cymru in Wales, who have pushed this idea of an ethnic identity. Although they don't mean to, they have pushed it by their very existence. I think it's a very interesting time. And the idea that we're coming out here and we're talking about our ethnic groups, I think that is a much, much more defensible platform and a much easier platform to sell than the idea of the old-fashioned British nationalism. Because a lot of the idea of British nationalism is that basically it's a one-size-fits-all culture for everybody on these islands. Even though the English, the Irish, the Scots and the Welsh are different people and they are distinct ethnicities. But also, if British nationalism is a one-size-fits-all nationalism for those different groups, why can't others be involved? Why can't passport holders be involved? However, although you can hold a passport, you can never become English. You can never get a document that makes you English. That's impossible. And the left are talking more and more about race, more and more about ethnicity. And that is the big debate today. It's about engaging with people on racial grounds. And really, although the left are our enemies, they are breaking the taboo. And at one time, when you knocked on a door and you were calling on behalf of the BNP, people would engage you on mass immigration. People would engage you on issues of council tax. They would engage you on issues of policing or whatever the sort of scandal of the day was. Quite often, political correctness was a big issue on the doorstep, but no one would ever engage with you on issues of race, or very few people would anyway. But now, with the left constantly wanting to talk about race, and two parties existing, one in Wales and one in Scotland, that are basically pushing, whether they like it or not, the idea that there are differences between people, and on the surface level, they are representing those ethnic groups. I think this is a perfect chance for us. And it allows us to have conversations with people that maybe 10 years ago or, you know, more, you actually couldn't have. What do you think about that? Do you think race is becoming less taboo because of what the left are doing? Or do you still think it's a tough conversation to have?
I believe that it is getting easier, but the propaganda has been very effective. Like, I've got family members who are very much on board with my politics almost entirely. But then as soon as you approach the topic of ethnicity or race, it goes straight to the, well, we're all the same and everyone bleeds the same blood, all that stuff. Like the recycled talking points they've heard on the telly a million times, whether it be subliminal or not. But it is getting easier, and if as they ramp up, all like the Black Lives Matter stuff. They've got you've got these like Muslim groups, and you've got like all these other groups that are allowed to have an identity, a history, a culture. But if you continue denying every like us, like the natives, you will just see it as I say, come to the fore. But one of the funny things I've seen about the mainstream having to accept like race and everything. I don't know if you saw that hilarious fact check. Well, I don't know if you remember the meme, but it's like 58% of the population. No, sorry, 13% of the population commit 58% of violent crime in America. And then the fact checker said it's actually 13.1% of the population commit 57.95% of the crime. But they labelled it all the, it's a white nationalist, neo-Nazi, far-right talking point. And you're like, they were off by 0.5%. No, sorry, 0.05%. So they are getting themselves in a bit of a sticky situation when they're trying to talk about race all the time, but then deny the realities of race. So I think they've shot themselves in the foot massively.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I shared a meme like that early hours of this morning on my YouTube community. It's basically, it's a woman in a car screaming at the passenger in the back seat, and over her eyes it's got the independent fact checkers, and then the subtitle, "Why can't you just be normal?" And then in the bottom it's the Django Unchained meme of Leonardo DiCaprio laughing. And it just says FBI crime statistics and laughs in racism. It just cracks me up.
Now, we've talked a little bit about the way that the SNP plied Cymru and other fake nationalist parties have sort of legitimized talk of race. And we've also talked about how the left have legitimized talk of race. But also, there is the elephant in the room. And we are seeing Europe begin to tear itself to pieces. I mean, just last week, we saw someone else, this time a French teacher, beheaded on the streets of France by a Muslim extremist. Now, in Scotland, and this is something that you probably wouldn't expect for Scotland, this is something you maybe expect in London or Oldham or Rotherham, but Scotland has seen the most brutal and despicable racist murder that ever took place in Britain. And it was largely covered up by the media. Obviously, I'm talking about the case of Chris Donald. Now, this is something that didn't receive much media coverage, especially none south of the border. And it was largely covered up due to its graphic nature and the fact that the white victim was selected because of the colour of his skin and brutally tortured and murdered by a gang of Pakistani Muslims. Is there anything you want to say about that?
Oh, if you want to jump in, no chance, on you go, mate.
Well, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was the first racially motivated like crime on record in Scotland. And it was a non-white on a white. It's not this caricature you see everywhere where it's all these white people hiding around corners, like attacking minorities. The first ever case of a racial crime like that was a Pakistani on a white boy, and as you say, he was purely selected because of his skin colour. I think the Pakistani lad was embarrassed outside a club at the weekend, and then they decided that they'll just take revenge on any white person because it was a white person that embarrassed them. And I think he's received several beatings in prison, which I'm entirely for. He deserves it. There's a lot goes on in Scotland I don't think you hear about. They've tried to cover up grooming gang cases as well. There are racially motivated attacks where the description is always left out in the news reports. It's just the same cover-up campaign that they have elsewhere, but I think we seem to be kind of in Sweden levels of covering up minority crime.
Well, didn't Sweden even go so far as to make it a crime to actually report on the ethnicities of the perpetrators. I believe I read that somewhere a while back.
Coming to a country near you, that's... if they don't want you talking about what's actually happening, so they'll hide the stats and you'll just go, oh, the crime is increasing, immigration is increasing, but we can't really prove that because the government is hiding who's responsible for said crime. But the Chris Donnell case was disgusting. And I like how...
with the water from that puddle, and the main perpetrator of this attack then fled to Pakistan. So in an attempt to evade justice. Now, obviously, he is back here and thankfully he is in jail. But the brutality of this attack was unbelievable. And if you compare the case of Chris Donald with the case of Stephen Lawrence, and I ask anyone to do this tonight, Google Stephen Lawrence and look at the number of search results you get, then Google Chris Donald and see the number of search results you get. I mean, to put things into perspective, Chris Donald's parents are not known. They're not celebrities. But Stephen Lawrence's mother is now a baroness, I believe. I think it's a baroness. Am I correct? Yeah, and she has a lifetime seat now in the House of Lords. I mean, her son died, and that must have been terrible for her. But she has received a peerage in the House of Lords. There has been nothing of the sort for Chris Donald's parents, and that attack was completely covered up by the mainstream media. This is exactly what we talk about. These two cases illustrate that there is racial inequality in Britain, but that racial inequality is not against non-whites. It is against the indigenous people of these islands. Now, I can tell you this. If a gang of white Scots, or there's nothing but white Scots, what am I talking about? If there was a gang of Scottish men who had captured a Pakistani Muslim and taken him on a several hundred mile round journey, torturing him before killing him by setting him on fire, that would have been front page news for, well, months. There would have been... There would probably be memorial services every year in Scotland. His name would have been inscribed somewhere in every school. Every child in Scotland would have been taught about him. But because Chris Donald was white, he's basically a footnote. In fact, if you look for pictures of him, it's very hard to even find a decent picture of the lad. Now, Stephen Lawrence, he was never an architect, but there are architectural awards in his name because apparently he wanted to be an architect. So, of course, there has to be awards in his name. And in fact, I read an article, I think it's on the Architects Journal, called The Architectural Legacy of Stephen Lawrence. Well, he never designed a single building or anything, but he has an architectural legacy. Chris Donald doesn't have any legacy because the media have ignored his plight and his horrific death. And this really does speak volumes about the way white people are treated. But you did mention something very interesting there, and I'd like to follow up with a question here. What grooming cases have taken place in Scotland? Because when you talk about grooming, you always think of England, you always think of Rotherham, you think of Keighley, you think of Telford. But you never hear of these things taking place in Scotland. Is this just another big media cover-up that we haven't heard of down here in England?
There's been a few cases. There's been a few in Glasgow. I'm pretty certain Aberdeen, Dundee, if I'm not mistaken. There's been a few places, but you don't really hear about it. There was one recently uncovered. I think it was probably this time last year. But they've had to admit that this did exist, and it was covered up, and that was a Glasgow one. But I even remember growing up, there was all these shops that young girls were told to stay away from, and I just didn't think anything of it at the time. I was young, and they would also give the young girls alcohol. They'd go in to pay for it, they'd leave it out the back, whereas us young lads, we were known to binge drink in Glasgow. I don't know if you're aware of that. But we try and get some, they'd be like, no, we're sorry, we don't serve you. And I just thought, that's a bit strange. And you'd never put two and two together. But I wouldn't be surprised if the area I grew up in, there was grooming cases as well, with the likes of providing alcohol and driving them about. There's also some known to drive young girls about in cars and stuff. It's up and down the country, anywhere you look where these people reside, there will be grooming cases. You even hear about the ones that are uncovered in England, where they've trafficked them up and down the country and they've sold them for like £50, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea until the news broke, what was it, last autumn time, about the Glasgow grooming gang.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I was aware that it had been going on in England. And this is sort of how, well, I guess it's a testament to, you know, my time away from Scotland. I had no idea, like, just how bad things were getting up there until I really started to dig back into it again. And yeah, I mean, the town I grew up in, Scotland, wasn't as enriched as Glasgow is. I grew up in a town called Dumfries, very small population of about 30,000 people, very white, and we are sort of minute Cantonese population. So yeah, I never noticed anything like that in my town growing up. Like, as you said, you had the binge drinking culture as a teenager, but yeah, like, we had like one kebab shop in the town and I don't think they sold alcohol.
It was interesting about that, it absolutely has to be said, is that when, and this is something we talk about in Going Free, when you have a non-white population in your midst that has, or is in a state of what we refer to as numerical diffidence, they behave less like is the norm of their biospirit in the general population, because they are fearful of the host or general population. Now, there are different factors here, so it's not just, we use the word numerical because generally that's the case, but there are different factors that contribute to whether or not the non-white group present in a country begins to act out and project their biospirit, act in ways that are instinctual and normal for them. Depends on the strength and the confidence of the host population. It depends on whether or not the biology of the guest population, if you will, or the non-white population. Certainly religions can empower them beyond their biology, and of course their biology informs their religious decisions. So there's a lot there, but one of the reasons why, of course, there would have been less of it is that there were fewer of the individuals to act this way in the past, and they were also suffering from numerical diffidence. They were afraid that the population would swarm them, if you will, if they were to behave in a way that was contradictory to the host population. And that's why, of course, the person fled. And there's another thing is they don't know that fled to Pakistan. The other thing is that they're not necessarily aware that the regime's media, et cetera, is anti-white and will come to their defense and cover these things up. It takes a while before they finally put two and two together. In the United States, they've obviously put two and two together. They're showing up at offices of conservatives, nationalists, just general groups, Republicans, and trying to murder these people. You're not hearing about any of this. They're not reporting about any of this in the news because it contradicts the anti-white narrative. And so therefore it's a hush crime. So my question to the both of you is, knowing what you know now, seeing the sort of the heinousness of this absolute sadistic, brutal murder, which, make no mistake, this is what our brothers and sisters in South Africa go through regularly. This is the kind of thing that happens to our people wherever we give up the control of our destiny to others. It never goes well for us. And I mean, they're already talking about truth and reconciliation commissions in the United States when finally Trump is out of office, whether it's this 4 years they're saying or the next 4 years. That means they're coming after everybody who contradicted anti-whiteism when Trump had his 8 years in office. So my question to you is, knowing both of you, knowing both what's going on now, what's happening in other Western countries, the state of the political parties, et cetera, in Scotland, where do you see the next 5 years? Where do you see the next 10 years? Do you see the general working class finally standing up and saying, well, we see what's going on around the world and we're not going to have any more of it? Do you see things getting worse? What is your view on the ground?
I personally think that over the next 5 years, it's going to be difficult. I think activism will play a vital role in waking up the apolitical people. I've mentioned this in a few streams about the SNP's success. I think a lot of that is the perception in the mainstream that they're going to win, that they're so popular, where a lot of people don't get off the couch and vote. Well, there's loads of people that detest the SNP. But when you ask them, well, who did you vote for? But I didn't vote. And it's because they just assumed they were going to win. So I think the perception of success is stronger than the reality of their success. So I think that on the ground activism, waking up your friends and family members to actually what's going on, will play a vital role in trying to change things in the future. Can it be done in 5 years? I don't think so, but it's a fight worth fighting.
Well, seeing as I live in England, I'm still sort of, you know, keeping tabs in Scotland at the same time. The next 5 years, as far as England is concerned, I can see the Tories tripling down on this anti-white rhetoric while trying to pay lip service to things like they did today in Parliament, where, you know, it's like, well, you know, critical race theory is just a theory. Your teachers should not be teaching it as fact. You know, it's lip service like that, but they never really do anything. So I'm going to predict that the Tories will triple down on this anti-white rhetoric to keep courting the Muslim vote like we've seen them do at the last election. As far as Scotland is concerned, I mean, they've got an election next May, I believe. So, yeah, we've got a little over 6-7 months to, you know, try and wake up as many Scots as possible, because, I mean, the way, like, Hamza Youssef with his hate crime bill that he's currently had to shelve and, you know, change the wee definitions about, but that would basically be the death knell for freedom of speech in Scotland. That would put a nail in any sort of white advocacy. You would not be allowed to advocate for your own group. They'd basically be coming after us. Well, I say us, the Scots. So I think, yeah, we've got, if we can really knuckle down and, you know, ramp up the activism over the next 6 to 7 months, I think there is a chance, judging by how scandal-ridden the SNP is currently at the moment as well, with, you know, Nicola Sturgeon burying certain bits of information that she, you know, was withholding from parliamentary inquiries and whatnot. I think there's a good chance that we could get enough people awake in the next 6 or 7 months that we could just about boot the SNP out of power. But the real problem there is the alternatives are shocking in Scotland. I mean, you've got people like Count Dankula endorsing the Scottish Libertarian Party, who are, you know, basically liberals at the end of the day. You know, libertarianism doesn't have any answers for the problems caused by liberalism, in my opinion. The Scottish Tories are massive globalists. I mean, their former leader was a lesbian and an obese one at that. And then you've got Scottish Labour, who are basically globalism light as well. So, yeah, I mean, there is a chance to get the SNP out, but who do you put in their place?
Can I jump in? Well, I quite like Dankula. He's not the worst person in the world, and he does believe in actual free speech. And when I tweeted a number of people about Ursula Haverbeck, an 89-year-old grandma being sent to the gulag in Germany for talking about a certain historical occurrence, he was the only one who actually had the integrity to say that was wrong. Now, people like Tommy Robinson babble on about free speech constantly when it affects him, but he's the kind of guy that would either say nothing about Ursula Haverbeck or, worse still, actually say that she deserves to go to jail for talking about that. So I've got to hand it to Dankula. He might not be our cup of tea in every way, but he is at least sincere and consistent when it comes to matters of free speech. Whereas people like Sargon and Tommy Robinson are basically just naked opportunists that only talk about these issues when it is financially expedient for them to do so. Does anyone want to add to any of that?
I agree with what you said about Dankula. I like him. I think his performance when he tried to debate Vosh was put off. It was just basically trying to prove to Vosh that he's not racist. And then he made a comment about basically he doesn't care if the Scots are replaced, which I don't think he genuinely believes that, if I'm honest. But he's very consistent in the free speech stance. And I would love him to have a conversation with yourself or some ethno-nationalist about like freedom of speech and the way forward. How can you truly preserve freedom when you're inviting in the world who don't care about it? I was going to make a point on Sargon. I noticed he tweeted from one of his multiple accounts about your bank getting shut down, but he didn't make any video. He didn't highlight it to his audience where there's more of a reach, because I think that's very against his liberal values, but he would not dare mention you because, of course, you're the horrible, evil Nazi that he's mentioned before in a video, but he skimmed right past that. But that would have been an ideal opportunity for him to go, right, I might disagree with this guy, however, this is completely wrong, and put it to kind of front and centre of people's consciousness that this is going on in our liberal, free society, as he likes to exclaim. But that's all I've really got to add to that.
I think Sargon's very two-faced. Dankula was asked to debate me or at least talk to me on the kill stream by Ethan Ralph, but he declined. I don't hold it against him. Obviously, if we ended up talking, he would have to maintain consistency, and he might not want to do that. Look, his YouTube account is absolutely booming. He's getting great numbers. He's clearly making a very good living for himself now. I think he's just got married. He's got a lovely house. He doesn't want to rock the boat, and he's moved away slowly but deliberately away from Sargon and UKIP and his foray into that sort of disastrous European election that saw UKIP sink. And I can understand why he's done that. I can understand why he doesn't want to talk to me. And at least he is consistent, and I can't knock him for any of that. I think that he does pander to the left a little bit, and I think he panders to the left a little bit because he feels if he does just enough pandering, his nice, fat, healthy YouTube channel will continue chugging on, will continue attracting subscribers, and that's his livelihood sorted for the rest of his life. I mean, if you are a big YouTuber and you're making all that ad revenue and they're still letting you take the super chats, there's a lot of money in it. And at the end of the day, I don't see him as somebody who would have ever been a serious nationalist anyway. I don't think he has the same value system as us exactly. But I think he is very naive and foolish to believe that Scotland and his value system would ever be a workable prospect if Scotland was dominated by other ethnic groups. Now, if no one's got anything further to say on that, if they have, speak now. Otherwise, we'll go to some of these super chats. Okay. Well, we have reached the halfway point. We are starting to do some of the super chats. If you haven't super chatted yet and you want to, I have just put the Entropy link in the chat. It's also on my Twitter. I'm on my Telegram. You still have time to share the stream and get involved one way or another. There's also polls over on Entropy, and we have done a poll. How do you identify? Do you identify as British? Do you identify as English, Scottish, Welsh, or are you not from the UK? And it seems that everyone from the UK identifies as either English, Scottish, or Welsh. And I have received a text message about this. I don't usually read out text messages live on air, but this is from somebody who does make regular contributions. She says, when immigrants are being called British, I think it forces people to re-examine their identity too. British becomes meaningless. I like the way nationalists are now able to acknowledge their individual ethnicity, English, Scottish, or Welsh, but come together as Indigenous British. I think that's an excellent comment there. Thank you to the person who sent it. And I absolutely agree with that. I agree with that 100%, and I do believe that British has become more and more meaningless over time. So let's do some of these other super chats. The Thin Red Line gave $5 and said, I was banned from YouTube today and I am not spicy. Has anyone else experienced the same in the last few days? Well, I am still live on YouTube, hanging by a thread and not using the account. All my videos disappeared. Jason, are you still there?
Yes, I am very careful and remaining. So you have to be very careful on YouTube. But yeah, we're still there.
Okay, and these guys are too. So I think YouTube has had some purges. We talked about Adam Green. He is on the show next week. So looking forward to that and looking forward to what he has to say. Junta Mominari gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, did you see the Chinese ambassador once again accuses Europe and America of white genocide because the Zionist occupational government is attacking China for the fake Uyghur genocide? Don't buy into the neocon lies about China. Thank you very much for that. Sentient Beans gave £10. And he says, E. Michael Jones versus Gavin Bobie. That's the debate I want to see. Well, thank you very much. I've noticed that Gavin Bobie has been very supportive of me and Laura with our banking problems, but I haven't spoken to me or E. Michael Jones or heard of him at all, actually, for quite some time. The Inextinguishable gave £25. Thank you for the generous donation. And he said, keep up the good work. You are all a great inspiration. Well, thank you very much. Serena JB gave £3. Thank you very much. And she says, it's interesting to see how many of us has come from the left and how many of us still have left-wing sympathies. What proportion of nationalists do you think come from that position? Well, let's go around the group. I actually think that nationalism is not something that can be easily defined as either left or right. And I've talked about this before, but I think we do have a love for our people. But because we treat our people as family, we believe in certain socialist policies. I believe in the NHS. I believe in a safety net for people who hit on hard times. I believe in standing together as a group and helping each other out. I believe in community. I don't believe in this wanton capitalism and materialism. I've spoken about this before. I think I defined it best when Chris Dangerfield asked me about it. He actually said, am I a national socialist? And I said, I would never describe myself as that, but I am a nationalist. And I do believe that socialism within a distinct and individual ethnic group that sticks together is a good thing. You treat each other like family and you help each other out. This idea that capitalism and materialism and crawling over the dead bodies of your close friends and family to get to that wonderful consumer good is a good way to live is just a nonsense. We do need to stick together and we need to help each other out. And I always find it quite interesting when people turn their nose up at that, but then claim that they're proud to be British and I'm on the wrong side of history. Well, one of the defining sort of institutions or British institutions is the NHS, which is obviously a socialist institution. It provides free medical care for anyone, whether you've paid in tens and tens of thousands of pounds a year in tax or whether you're a child that has paid nothing in tax. But I believe institutions like the NHS can only flourish in a closed nationalist society. If you open them up to other people, if you open that up to the rest of the world and mass immigration, that is when the system collapses. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that there are people coming over to us who have left-wing sympathies? Obviously, that's true for Calamity. How many people do you think we can appeal to on the left? Do you think it's a good idea to increasingly try to appeal to people on the left?
On you go, mate. You're the lefty.
Hey, former lefty. There are, like, well, I'll start with the PA, 20-point plan. There is not a single point in that I disagree with. So if that makes me a nationalist and a socialist, then so be it. But yeah, I completely agree with you on that one, Mark. A socialism that benefits our ethnic group, combine it with nationalism, is the way forward for us. And how do you sell that to, well, you're never going to sell that to hardcore lefties, are you? You're never going to sell that to, your rabid communist types that are, completely subscribed to that ideology. You're more moderate types, though. If I could use an example, would I be right in saying that Jody Kay came across to us from a sort of centre-left position?
Yes, so, she did. Well, actually, I'd say from more of a liberal sort of hippie position, if she doesn't mind me saying that.
Well, there you go. And I even managed to convince my dad to sign up to PA, and he was, staunch classical liberal type, you know, very sort of lackadaisical with the attitude towards the world. I mean, he always worked hard, always provided for his family, provided for his kids. I mean, he brought up five kids on his own at one point when my mum left the picture. So all credit to him for that as well. But, you know, I managed to sort of get under that sort of liberal sort of outer shell that he would, you know, display. And I'd be like, look, Dad, just read this. And, you know, just, you know, you're a staunch Cockney. You identify as a Cockney your whole life. You know, is it so hard just to, you know, extend that to English? And he's just like, you know, you got a point, son. And, you know, like 2 days later, I seen him on my missus came through and she was like, your dad's sharing some very spicy stuff on Facebook. And I'm just like, what's he sharing? It's a PA article. And I'm just like, legend. So, yeah, I think we can appeal to the sort of, you know, your classical liberal types. But yeah, your communists, we're never going to win them over, I don't think.
I think I had a bit of a different journey from you, Kyle. I was never a communist. I was never a lefty. I would say I was probably centre-right. I still hold a lot of libertarian values, but I understand there's flaws, like any ideology, which I've had libertarians say libertarianism isn't an ideology. I can't remember the exact phrase he used, but they were trying to claim that libertarianism isn't an ideology, it's just the best way forward. I'm like, all right, okay, no bother, big man. But I'm kind of centre-right, libertarian, socially conservative, I would say. Probably if you're looking at it from an American point of view, because I think left and right in the UK and left and right in America are very different. From an American standpoint, socially conservative, more economically libertarian. But I think to preserve those things that we value, like free speech, free markets, like the marketplace of ideas, all that stuff that we love, you need to be the majority. You can't invite in the world and maintain all those things you hold dear. We see that everywhere. The more people we bring in, the less freedoms we have. And I think if any serious libertarian does want to preserve these freedoms, then they accept that open borders is just a pipe dream. It's idealism. Ideally, people will come in, they will assimilate, doesn't matter the numbers, and they will help the market. They're like, no, that's not how it's panning out in reality, and you can see that.
Both sage points. I'll say this is one of the reasons why we don't, in going free, don't bother to look at the artificial spectrum of left-right. I mean, you just heard a lot of different names of these different categories. When you look at this sort of a soup of all of these different names of what people might consider themselves, it's completely turbid, it's completely ambiguous. People, one person saying that they believe in whatever, fill in the blank X, and another person saying the same word actually mean different things when you get them to break it down. Well, what is really a this position? What is really a that position? So to the question of whether or not people are coming over to our point of view, who have views, let's say, like concern for the environment they put foremost, concern for animal rights and welfare they put first and foremost in their views, things of these nature that are within the anti-white narrative traditionally associated with the left. There are absolutely those folks coming over, but I will suggest a pellucid way to view this, and that is whether or not people are sort of neutral anti-white or they are amenable to the ideas to serve white well-being. And white people, or any race for that matter, who are rabidly anti-white, very few of them are going to come over to the service of white well-being. And so what we have here, how many times we have people come over who say, well, I was on the left, or I was a whatever on this part of the spectrum. And then because of X, Y, or Z, it was intellectual pursuit, it was courage that they had. Very often you hear these people say, I had to get brave enough to finally accept reality and then to actually move on over to a position that was healthy for me and my family and my community, my country. But you don't very often hear somebody say, well, I just wanted to victimize Western kind for the totality, and every thought I had, every vote I made was to victimize Western kind. You don't very often see them coming over. So the question then becomes, and we're talking about pragmatism here rather than just observation, so that we can actually recapture our destiny, that is, who do you try to talk to? Well, you try to talk to help go free those folks who are most amenable. That's where you go. And then if you come across somebody who is or holds the views that maybe the environment is extremely important, or maybe taking care of each other is extremely important, because that, of course, is true for those of us who care and are about our people who are serving white well-being, and that is concern for each other. Hyper-individualism goes the way of the dodo bird over here. If you come across somebody who has those kind of views, well, then you attempt to persuade them to go free. If you come across somebody who says Western kind is responsible for every paper cut and worse that happens anywhere in the world, particularly to non-white people, whom in this anti-white narrative, I believe, have been guilty of nothing over all of history, then you just say, thank you, have a nice day, and you move on to somebody that you can reach. So that is really, I suggest strongly to everyone, stop using all of the words that the anti-whites use, all the names that they take for themselves. And by the way, the only word that you can call them that they don't like is anti-white. If you call them commies, if you call them Marxists, if you call them any of that, they love that. That's the names that those are the names they've taken for themselves. And final point I'll make, and I'll pass it back so we can get to the rest of the great comments, is that when you call them all of these names, you don't do anything for us. You don't bring us together as a people. You don't identify you as a member of a community. You don't identify our community as a community under attack. And therefore, you don't identify yourself as an individual that's under attack. And I pass it back to Mark.
Thank you. Another small point about the left-right issue. You want to watch Morgoth's latest video. I was watching it today as I was doing the washing up before after dinner and before I came on this show, and he was talking about HS2, the new high-speed railway link, and how it's destroying vast swathes of English countryside, 400-year-old oak trees being destroyed. And he's saying that the only people really talking about HS2 are the left, and the left are talking about it a lot, but we should be talking about it. And this is the sort of false left-right dichotomy that the papers sort of support. So you'll have anyone who describes themselves as right-wing defend capitalism, defend this railway that's cutting down all the beautiful old trees and destroying the woodland and English countryside. And then the left, they'll be seen as the hippies, and they're saying, oh, no, man, we don't need all this capitalism. We just need a bit of love, and we need all the old trees. And then all the people who feel they're on the right wing don't really feel they can support the old trees in the countryside, because, I mean, after all, that's a left-wing thing to do, isn't it? They have to support progress. They have to support big business and the development and the trains and the jobs. And they don't. I believe that as nationalists, we shouldn't be pigeonholed either right or left, as I said earlier. And something like HS2, that is a capitalist conservative party wet dream. They don't care about the countryside. They conserve nothing. They don't mind destroying all these beautiful old oak trees. They don't mind destroying anything of beauty, as long as it raises GDP a bit. This is what we should be pushing back against, and we shouldn't get trapped in this. And if a few Daily Mail readers don't like the fact we're making these points, to hell with it. I would rather have decent people on board who want to protect the countryside than please a load of people who proudly call themselves capitalists. It's a nonsense. So, yeah, I think that we should take the position we've taken for so long, which is that we are neither left or right. We do what is best for our people, the indigenous people of these islands, and these islands themselves. Is there anyone that wants to add anything to this before we move on?
I was just going to say one of the things that highlighted that ridiculous left-right fight was the grooming gang issue. As if you talked about grooming gangs, you were a right-winger. And you're talking about the rape of children, and somehow caring about that makes you right-wing or far-right or whatever label they place on you. You're like, that should be something that people can get behind and decide we're against this as people, not as a political persuasion. So, again, it is, we are tribal by nature, and if they can divide us by left and right, it works in their favour. They can put things in certain boxes and people will not touch it with fear of being outcasted from the group that they supposedly belong to.
Thank you. And there's one other thing I'll add about this as well. Before the last general election, I said that I believed Boris Johnson and the Tories would be as bad as Labour. They were both going to do exactly the same thing and you should vote for neither. And I didn't vote for either. But I noticed that these CivNet parties, For Britain was one of the notable ones, their leading members and supporters were all in favour of Boris Johnson and the Tories. They were actually celebrating when Boris Johnson won. They were talking about this new era for Britain. And look at the state we're in now. And that is why ethno-nationalists and people who don't put themselves on this stupid left-right scale can hold their heads up higher and are head and shoulders above these cringeworthy CivNets. The fact is, we know that if we vote Labour or if we vote Tory, we are doomed. We have to pick a third way. And that third way is ethno-nationalism and voting in policies that are for the good of our people. And most importantly, treating our people as extended family. And that's something these CivNets just don't get. They were actually celebrating when Johnson got in. And up until very recently, that Anne-Marie Waters, that foul Anne-Marie Waters, was praising Rishi Sunak and Preeti Patel. Well, Preeti Patel now holds the record for letting in the most migrants. And Rishi Sunak, he's there grinning, that stupid grin on his face as he holds up his diversity coin. I mean, these CivNets will get us absolutely nowhere. And it's why they won't debate us, because they want to sit on this ludicrous left-right scale. They want to wave their little plastic Union Jacks when Boris Johnson gets in. We don't. We want to burn this whole rotten system to the ground and erect something better. And that is why we stand head and shoulders above them. Anyway, moving on. Next super chat. Junta Mominari, $5. He said, are you aware Chinese privilege is taught in Singapore? Anti-discrimination laws in Singapore and some cities in Japan include whites as a protected class. Obviously, China isn't behind white privilege in the West. Why would they allow it in Singapore? Well, thank you very much for that super chat. For Camaraderie, gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, while working, I commented that all white people need to stand together and now face possible dismissal on grounds of racism after 15 years service. It was a white Scottish male who complained he would rather take down a brother than stand united. Well, I'm sorry to hear about your problems at work. I hope they resolve themselves. And for shame for the man that reported you. What a spineless, horrible weasel. Stanley Sloggett gave £20. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, any thoughts on the slaughter of the teacher in France and how freedom of speech to Western man is under threat? Well, we briefly touched on the issue of the French teacher being beheaded for showing the pictures of Mohammed. Again, what do we expect? We import these people. This is almost a carbon copy of what happened in the Lee Rigby case, which was horrific. And at the time, I remember when that happened, people said, this is going to be a turning point. This is going to be a point that wakes people up. This is going to be something that gets people thinking, that gets people talking, that causes people to push back. But here we are, and it's happened again. And people don't seem to learn from these mistakes. And we're standing here still talking about these things. But I think there's going to be a lot more cases like this. There's going to be a lot more terrorism. And I think the powers that be will actually be breathing a sigh of relief this year that there won't be any Christmas markets to attack, that there won't be any Christmas gatherings to drive trucks into. Let's face it, they can advance their multicultural project a lot easier during a lockdown than they can when people are free to move about. What do you guys think about what happened in Paris?
Well, I did see they were reporting it as a knife attack in multiple outlets, which is just ridiculous. But I have noticed that the French have been kind of fighting back, which was decent. They were putting pictures of Mohammed with his arse out all over the Muslim areas of Paris, which I'm sure will get some unwanted retaliation or disproportionate retaliation. I did notice there was other people questioning whether the teacher should have shown a picture of the Prophet. We're at a point now where we're questioning someone showing a cartoon because it might provoke people who shouldn't be here. But no, it's disgusting the way they've tried to frame this. The people coming to the defence of the attacker is ridiculous. I saw another one, which was a Muslim gentleman who was saying that there was a disproportionate force used against someone who just had a knife because he was shot. You know, the guy just beheaded someone. I think that's proportionate. But it's just disgusting. And as you say, there's been multiple things like this that you hope would be the turning point. But we are going at a very slow pace, I would say. But I'll pass it on.
Well, I just wanted to say that I sort of, initially when it happened, I mean, I saw the videos like most of us did, and it was just absolutely horrendous. And then you saw the photographs. What I found interesting, first of all, was sort of Macron's response, but then I realised he was talking about the actual indigenous French that might actually, you know, stand up to this stuff. So I was just like, oh yeah, I'm not surprised, you know. Macron, that's a very echoey name, you know. But yeah, I did notice today that the French have responded in kind, sort of, and it seems to have triggered a lot of them. So I'm now just kind of worried about, you know, if this is going to escalate anymore, because I've got French ancestry, I've got a French surname, not grandparents, so I think it's great-great-grandparents on my dad's side were French. So yeah, I'm going to be watching this closely, but as you say, it's going to get worse before it gets better, you know. I mean, there's an old post that does the rounds on Britpol. I'm a frequenter of 4chan, unfortunately for me. It's basically talking about how the demographic situation is going to change in Britain, and it just ends it with the phrase Bantu Bolshevism, and then it says something like 13 million Lee Rigbys, 10 million Charlene Downs. And yeah, people need to sort of wake up to it. I mean, but then you had incidents like the Bataclan and the original Charlie Hebdo massacre, and did they wake people up? It's debatable, isn't it?
Well, the reason why, and I think we've talked about this sort of thing before, the first, you know, so many attacks many years ago and giant slaughters, the kind of things that you see in third world countries around the world. And was the question, what's going to happen? What are people going to do? And then the big fear was, are they just going to become numb to it? And the reality is that most people have become numb to it. But there is a silver lining to that, and that is that subconsciously, on a deeper level, people have and are losing faith in all of the governing institutions, in all of law enforcement, in all of these politicians who just rotate through these offices, and their ability to create an environment in which civilization, law and order, etc., exists, and for these people to be able to feel safe in their communities. And where the pressure is building, and it's building, trust me, is in the females of our race, because they feel the fear more so than the males. We can fight, we can defend ourselves much more easily than they can, given, you know, a happenstance or something on the streets. But they are less likely to be able to defend themselves. They need a very rigid, and their children, totally unable to protect themselves, they need a very rigid law and order matrix. And so they are rescinding, if in many cases, and this is to various degrees for individuals, rescinding their loyalty from these institutions. This means that there is a great opportunity for us, and we need to be able to seize the opportunity. We need to be able to talk about things like this beheading. And instead of allowing yourself to be swept away with the absolute data and stats of all of the numbers of people killed and the comparisons and this sort of thing, which it seems the white race is wont to do, because we build systems and we build data, and then we take the systems and data and we create what we refer to as Western civilization, not created by anyone else on planet Earth. What we need to do is you settle on the subject of a slaughtered person, this teacher, What about his wife? What about his children? What about what their life would have been like? What about how they are suffering? Why isn't? And the reason you talk about this is to drive home what you know is the underlying current in your audience, whether it's one or many, in the underlying current in their subconscious, which is that these institutions can't be trusted. Not only can they not be trusted to deliver safety, security, health and welfare, et cetera, but they're not even concerned, the institution, not even concerned with the well-being and what happened to, say, this individual's family, his children, how those around him are harmed. And then you can juxtapose that for how they behave with other groups of people. And then you drive home the point at the very end by saying, this is what the regime, this is the value this anti-white regime places on our people, which is zero. And if they place a value of zero on our people, that means that they place a value of zero on you as an individual member of our people. They will then be willing to listen to the rest of what you have to say.
Thank you. Blunderbuss gave $10. Thank you very much. And this is for the Scottish lands. Will the SNP ever rebrand and get rid of the word national? Their anti-white allies across the world don't like the term nationalist.
I know Nicola Sturgeon has said that if it was her choice now, she wouldn't have put the word national in it because it's dirty. But I think she's admitted that it's kind of too far down the line to rebrand. So I don't see it happening, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I don't see it happening either. As you say, it's part of the brand now. Sturgeon did want to ditch it at one point, but yeah, as you say, she realised it's not going to work for them anymore. But fingers crossed that the SNP are going to go the way of the Labour Party did in Scotland and in England, hopefully next year. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that. Cautiously optimistic.
Thank you. The Thin Red Line gave $5. Thank you very much. And said, hail all the indigenous people of the British Isles. Thank you. Ryan354 gave £3. Thank you very much. And said, this is very important. I want people to listen to this quite carefully. Chris Donald's killer went on to win a European human rights appeal because he was kept in solitary confinement too long in police custody. That tells you everything you need to know about the anti-white agenda. Now, under a nationalist government, under a PA government, Chris Donald's killer would have been taken out to a piece of land somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and he would not have returned. He was found guilty of one of the most heinous crimes to ever take place on British soil. He deserved the death penalty. Blunderbuss gave $5 and said, when will Patriotic Alternative have a pipe band? That would be good optics for starting the next conference. Smiley face. I can tell you one thing. The bagpipes produce possibly the most annoying sound I've ever heard in my life. Look, I like my Scottish brothers. They're great people, but they can't keep their bagpipes.
How dare you? I had those at my wedding.
Oh my God, that's so awful.
Yeah, you're right.
Look, you guys have done a lot of good things. I believe the deep fried Mars bar is very good. I hear the deep fried cream egg is even better. But as for the bagpipes, I'm sorry. You can bring me all the deep fried cream eggs you've got, but Please keep the bagpipes north of the border. I'm getting roasted here in the chat. People love bagpipes. Obviously, they are all have some kind of hearing impairment if they like the bagpipes. Somebody doesn't believe in deep-fried Mars bars. Do you guys want to explain deep-fried Mars bars?
If you can eat it, you can batter it. you can fry it. That's the Scottish way of thinking. I think they've got, you get the pickles with your chippy. They've recently started deep frying them in Scotland. You can get a deep fried pickle.
I always thought the bagpipes would be like a good torture method. Like if you were stuck in a room and you were just being played bagpipes on loop, any man would break so rapidly.
Deep fried bagpipes, that's an
excellent. Yeah, deep fried. Now that's something I could get behind. That is something I could get behind. Somebody said deep fried doner kebab. Does that exist?
Not to my knowledge, but it wouldn't surprise me if that did happen.
there is something sort of close to that. It's called a stoner. Any Scots in the chat will know exactly what a stoner means. It's a euphemism for a male erection. But basically what that is, it's a jumbo saveloy sausage wrapped in doner meat, battered, and then deep fried. And it is about, I'd say it's just shy of 1,000 calories.
You see, I like the idea of Scottish cuisine. That to me, that does appeal. I couldn't eat it all the time, but I would certainly try these culinary delights just in a nice silent room. Jekatira gave $5 and said, great stream. Well, thank you very much, my friend. Probably not going to get any more super chats from Scots ever after the bagpipe comment. Lee Peter gave £5. Thank you very much. And he said, no white guilt. It's just an apology. The first time I heard you speak, I thought you were off your head for the lap off your head. It was all bad pathogens I was taught in my life. And I am so sorry. So this guy thought you were insane. I still think you're a little insane, but he has apologized. You'll get no apology. You'll get exactly the same number of apologies from me as Garzy got. Would you like to comment on any of that?
Just a big thank you to whoever that is. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The chat is now, the chat is totally behind bagpipes, but the entire, I really like Susie Wong. She says she hates bagpipes too, so. Yes. Oh, no. It seems that people are split on the bagpipes, but the chat is mainly now discussing what can and cannot be deep fried. So I think you guys are ambassadors for Scottish culture here. Susan gave $10. Thank you very much for the super chat. It is very, very much appreciated. So that comes to the end of the super chats. So you still have time to send a donation if you wish, and the link is in the chat. But we do have some non-paid questions. Rory Herbert said, in 2005, my son was part of a pipe band on the flight deck of HMS Invincible as it sailed into Portsmouth prior to its decommissioning. Do either of your Scottish guests play the bagpipes?
No. No. I know someone that does, but it's pretty rare, I would say. Same with speaking Gaelic, like that's rare. I think it's like not even 1% speaks Gaelic in Scotland, so no.
I do actually have, there are actually Gaelic-speaking members of PA, well, not members, but supporters of PA. So, and we do support Gaelic-speaking, but other than one person, I haven't met anyone that does. Calamity, do you play the bagpipes?
Yes, I don't have any anymore. I got rid of them a long time ago, but I was a piper in the Cubs and the Scouts for the Dumfries division way back in the day. And I can play all the classics, Scotland the Brave, the Green Hills of Tyrol, even dabbled with a bit of Korn back in the day, the new metal band. The lead singer, he's got some Scottish heritage and he's incorporated the bagpipes into a few Korn songs, one of them being Chutes and Ladders, I believe. Big bagpipe intro at the start, which I learned to play. So, yeah, I can play the pipe. So if I ever get a set, I'm coming to your door with a mark.
Yes, I feel like I've opened this can of worms. People are also saying, do I like haggis? I have tried haggis, and It sounds, the ingredients and everything and what it's cooked in sound revolting, but it's actually very tasty. Haggis is actually very nice. As you can see, I'm a bigger fan of food than I am music.
You need to try a Highlander burger. It's like haggis it's like a chicken burger with haggis and peppercorn sauce. It's delicious, man. Delicious.
Oh, mate, that sounds fantastic. I really do like food, and I like everything right across the scale. I like everything from sort of really fine dining and high end stuff, right down to kind of sort of dirty takeaway food. Anything, I will try anything, and I've got a real sort of wide range of taste. But Scottish cuisine is just so fattening, but it just sounds
The chat have said you've redeemed yourself with the love for haggis. So there you go.
Oh, and somebody's now pointing out black pudding. I absolutely love black pudding. And I always see that as kind of a test of manliness. If you're doing a fry up and you sat there with a group of guys and they say, do you want black pudding? If there's any guys, oh, no, I don't eat black pudding. I'm always very suspect of the guys that turn their nose up at black pudding. I always get this absolutely beautiful black pudding, and I love it with fried bread. So the outside of the bread is crispy. The inside is fluffy and white. It always has to be white if you're frying bread. And then you have a really, really runny fried egg. So fried bread, runny fried egg, and really firm with a slight crisp shell black pudding. Oh, my God, that is perfect. I hope all of you guys like black pudding now, or there'll obviously be some hurt feelings here. Does anyone not like black pudding?
No, I don't like black pudding. No, it's nice.
I've never had a fry up without it, or haggis. Well, haggis is hard to get in England, so I'm telling a bit of a fib there. But black pudding is easy to come by down here, and very high in protein as well. I believe it is kind of a superfood, isn't it? But I tell you, the best way to have black pudding is from Stornoway, top of Scotland. They do it in like a sort of a apple liqueur called Calvados. And it is something else. I'll tell you that right now.
I used to hate black pudding, but just because I was told what it was made of. And then as I was tucking into my bacon, you know what I mean? Like, ew, not black pudding, disgusting.
It is a superfood too. It's very, very high in iron. It's the kind of food that it's so nutrient dense. It's amazing, actually, when you look at the nutrient density of some of these foods that people now turn their nose up at. These are what kept our ancestors going through the long, hard winters. Nothing was wasted. And even things like the blood was used in used creatively to create really, really tasty food. Filling and nutrient dense dishes. Black pudding is also very fatty too. Absolutely brilliant, especially in the winter. I cannot recommend meat heavy diets enough, and I also can't recommend enough proper fry-ups, especially if you've got a day of action or you're going out for a big walk. Fried bread, black pudding and egg, that'll keep you going well into the afternoon. If you have something like one of these cereal bars or anything like that, you'd be collapsing by 10 a.m. Tragic. Proper English breakfast, or proper sort of, should I call them British Isles breakfast to appease the Scots? Absolutely second to none. Now, here's a good question. This one's for No Chance. This is from the Reaver. Is No Chance actually Count Dankula's ethnat alter ego? Mark, please ask him. The public have a right to the truth.
I'm Count Dankula's pug.
Oh, God, I get that reference. I get that.
No, kidding on, I'm joking. No, but I think me and Count Dankula probably agree in a lot, politics wise, economically, but we kind of go in different paths when it comes to the importance of ethnicity and preserving culture and all sorts. But no, I'm not Count Dankula, I promise.
No, I can tell that. I can tell that. But as I said, we're not going to roast Dankula here. We often are quite harsh on this show to certain other groups and other people who we think are ultimately pushing the wrong thing. But Dankula, as I said, he really impressed me when I tweeted out about Ursula Haverbeck. I think the other people I included were, I think, Sargon, Lauren Southern, and there was somebody else as well, somebody I think in the counter-jihad movement, and they all ignored it. But Dankula didn't. He was absolutely on it, and he retweeted it. And as I say, that shows great consistency. And I understand as well that this doesn't really follow for me, because obviously I've taken a rather interesting route in my life, and I've always spoken my mind. And that has obviously harmed me in some ways. Obviously, it would harm me ever getting a well-paid job in the future. It would obviously harm me in a sense of my social standing. And that isn't something that's crossed my mind. Obviously now, you know, I don't have any source of income really due to the lockdown. And, you know, things like super chats go a long way to keeping my head above water. And that's very important to me. And I've put myself into that position. But I kind of understand why Count Dankula doesn't want to put himself in that position. I can kind of understand why he doesn't want to jump in with both feet and jump on the ethno-nationalist bandwagon. He doesn't want to have to get into a position where he isn't getting YouTube ad revenue. He isn't getting super chats through YouTube. He can't do his streams. And although it's not the path I took, and although it's not something that I can completely get on board with, I do understand why he's done that. And he never seems to massively counter signal us in the same way that Sargon does. So overall, as I said, I can't really have a massive go at the guy. I know some people don't seem to like him, and they don't like his ear stretches and some of the way he presents stuff. I admit I don't really watch his content. If I'm on YouTube watching content, it's usually sort of about retro gaming, or at the moment, actually, I've been listening to a lot of sort of documentaries and appraisals of old horror films, believe it or not. I have quite a wide interest in things, but I don't really watch or haven't watched much of his stuff. But I do understand his position. So if anyone's got any other takes on him before we move on.
No, because I think he's got a kid in the way now as well. I think his missus and him went through IVF and it was successful, which is lovely to hear. But did he mention anything about your deplatforming from a bank? Did he catch wind of that at all?
I don't know. And I don't want to shoot people down if they didn't hear about it. I know that a lot of people were very, very good about it. Styx Hexenhammer, he retweeted it. He made an issue of it. He also gave me a shout out in his 100,000 subscriber special on BitChute and told people to follow me. And that was a great help because it boosted my BitChute subscriber count by about 3,000. I'm up to about 17,500 now on BitChute. So there are people who've got behind us who aren't typically on our side or libertarians. But I don't know whether Dankula did hear about this, but I'm sure if he did hear about it, he'd be on our side. I can't imagine he sat there punching the air because myself and Laura have been deplatformed. And anyone that is just, if you're talking on the traditional left-right scale, anyone who would appear on that traditional scale just one step to the left of us shouldn't be punching the air. They should be very worried, because once me and Laura are gone and once all the other people like me and Laura are gone, the people one step to the left of us, they're next. Like idiots like Charlie Kirk and Stephen Crowder and people like them who said nothing when so many other Americans lost their Twitter accounts. Well, when Charlie Kirk woke up and his Twitter account was locked, he probably wishes he made more of a deal when Dr. David Duke and Andrew Anglian and Mike Enoch and all the others lost their accounts. And I think some of these conservatives are the worst, because they actually seem to be celebrating some of us being deplatformed. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out the sort of similarities between what you've just mentioned and what happened to the rapper Wiley? The black guy who basically started naming a certain tribe that you shouldn't be naming on Twitter. And he had people like Pretty Patel going after him. And then people like Lawrence Fox, who, wants to paint himself as our guy, but really isn't. Is coming out and applauding Pretty Patel, demanding that his tweets be taken down for, purported anti-Semitism. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, these people have no self-awareness whatsoever.
A complete dickhead. He's absolutely the definition of controlled opposition. I don't know if you saw his tweet where he appeared to allegedly say that he was more offended by racism than child porn, allegedly.
Yeah, I've got it screenshotted before it got deleted. So,
fairness, I do think that was maybe slightly uncharitable. I think what he was trying to say, which he didn't put across perfectly, is I think he was trying to say there was more racism in that film than there was child porn, which I don't agree with, but I think that was the point he was trying to make. But he failed.
I'm not so sure about that. I think he was telling the powers that be that he was the biggest anti-racist on the planet.
I probably wouldn't surprise me, but he actually, I'd done a video about him praising Pretty Patel It was just like a cut up of him saying, I love free speech this, free speech that. And then as soon as Priti Patel said, Twitter and YouTube and everyone need to do something about Wiley's anti-Semitism. And he was like, yeah, slay queen. And he blocked me on Twitter for doing that video. So he's clearly been on YouTube and he's searched his name and saw that and went, I'm blocking him. But now I'm not on Twitter, which is a shame. But I thought that was quite amusing and pretty telling.
Well, Wiley, we can't have the bagpipes at the next PA conference because Wiley's performing live. He's the he's gonna wrap me onto the stage at the next PA conference with some of his greatest hits. That's obviously a joke, by the way. I'm gonna have to say allegedly, just joking. I don't want Wiley to come in there. Wiley's gonna take court action. He's clearly not going to be at the PA conference. We've had another super chat. This one's from Daniel Lewis. He gave £20. Thank you very much, my friend. And simply said 14. 14 indeed. Thank you very much. Kelt said all nationalists should move to LBRY. Yeah, well, I've seen that. I mean, I've kind of bought into the whole BitChute thing now, and my stuff's up on there. I am a little bit hesitant to start loading to multiple platforms because when you've got such a large library of old videos that I have, it takes a lot of time to do that. Are you guys on LBRY?
No, I'm not on that. I'm on BitChute. I've got a DLive account, but I've not really uploaded or streamed on it yet. But YouTube for now, but. Yeah, I'll get the backups just in case.
Yeah, I'm on BitChute as well, but I have been looking into another site called Brand New Tube. There was a doctor who was on YouTube by the name of Vernon Coleman, and he was posting a lot of stuff just basically debunking the lies we're being sold from the globalists pushing the coronavirus on us. And, well, he's now had to migrate over there, and he's taken quite an audience with him. He's still, you know, getting views in the thousands. So, you know, maybe if BitChute, because you know they're going to come after that eventually. I mean, Twitter are already censoring BitChute links and marking them as, you know, hazardous to try and tear people from clicking on them. But, yeah, I think Brand New Tube is another way to look at it, just in case, you know, BitChute goes the way of the dodo as well, once we're all, because, you know, we're all inevitably going to be nuked off of YouTube at some point, aren't we? You know, we're not going to last on there forever, you know.
No, indeed. But look, we have come almost to the end of the show, and it has been a very, very successful show. We have had nearly 1,700 watching here on DLive at peak, and we have had just over 800 again watching on Radio Albion. So very, very strong numbers, especially for two newcomers such as yourself. So well done, guys. You certainly brought in the audience tonight, and I think it was a very lively show. So if you guys want to give yourself a bit of an outro and tell us where we can find you, that would be really, really great. And when I re-upload this to BitChute, make sure you send me over any important links on Telegram, and I'll put them in the show description for you so our audience can find you that way too.
I do. Cheers for having me, Mark and Jason. You can find me on YouTube. I'm probably better found on Telegram, social media-wise, because no longer on Twitter. So that's just t.me/nochanceyt. I'm on Parler as well, just @nochanceyt. I've not provided my passport or driving license because I'm not an idiot, because that's what they're looking for. But I do want to do a shameless plug in my recent video because it's been very well received from civic nationalists. People have sent it to their non-me family members who were in complete agreement, and the ethno-nationalists were praising it. So I think it walked the line of acceptable on all sides while presenting some convincing ethno-nationalist arguments. But aye, that's on my YouTube. If you just search No Chance, I'm top result for the moment, so you can just click there, subscribe. But cheers for having me again, lads. Thanks.
Yeah, it's been an absolute honour. Thanks for having me on, Mark, and thanks for having us on. If people want to find me, I have a YouTube channel, as I said at the top of the show. It's Calamity. It's the same on BitChute. You can find me on Twitter at 5Calamity, the number 5, and what else am I on? I'm also on Telegram, but I don't have a channel as per, but my DMs are always open if folk want to, you know, ask me anything. So that's @Calamity88. And that is a year of my birth before anyone starts jumping to conclusions there. Thanks again for having us on, Mark. And Jason, of course.
Well, thank you very much. It's been great having you guys on. And as I say, we will have to have you on again in the future. I think it's been a really interesting chat and we've discussed some different things. Jason, can you give yourself a bit of an outro? Tell us where to find you and who's on tap.
NoIGuild.org, theafterparty.tv, tap today, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be with Philosophicat. It's been splendid having both No Chance and Calamity on today. Splendid show and wonderful being with everybody in the live chat. And you, Mark, and I'll pass it back to you.
Thank you very much, my friend. It has indeed been a fantastic show. We've been live on DLive and on RadioAlbion.com. I will be back on Friday on BitChute with a video about the diversity coin and what it means for us. Also, I am live on Patriotic Talk on Monday with Chris, Natty, and Charlie Big Potatoes. I think Laura is also with us. And following that show, we have a special show hosted by Dionne Moller, Secret Sources. She's interviewing, I believe she's called the European Housewife. That will be at 9 p.m. after Patriotic Talk. So I'll be on at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Monday with Chris. And following that, Dionne is hosting the after show with the guest, the European Housewife. That is going to be a great show. So thank you so much, guys. I will also be back. Actually, I nearly forgot about this. I will also be back with the Ayatollah on Friday on his YouTube channel, and in the very early hours of Saturday morning, I will be live with Ethan Ralph on the Kill Stream. So as you can see, I am working very, very hard, doing a lot of streams. I will have a very, very busy weekend. Oh, and I'll be doing the Dr. David Duke show as well on Rent Radio Network. That's also restreamed on RadioAlbion.com. I'll be doing that on Friday. So if you want to catch me, that is my schedule for the next few days. But thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you to Calamity. Thank you to No Chance. Thank you, as always, to No White Guilt. Thank you to everyone who has donated so generously. We have one more donation from Bryneth Malden. He gave £20. Thank you very much, my friend, and says, thanks for all your work, Chance. Well, thank you. And thank you to everyone else who donated so generously. But most of all, as always, thank you to everyone in the live chat. It is absolutely superb to see so many people here, especially for two new guests such as these superb chaps. Thank you to everyone. This community is so strong and it is wonderful to see us all here every Wednesday night for PWR. We'll be back next week with Adam Green. Until then, stay safe, look after yourselves, and I'll see you all again soon. Have a great week. Have a great rest of your week.